This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And his first ever at bat.
Ground ball right side, base hit. One pitch, one hit. Cam Smith delivers. Payne, your first to third. He's safe.
Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
Yeah, it was good, man. First pitch, first swing. Base hit, ground ball, right side. Seems like he's hitting a lot of stuff to the right side, man. And I don't know if that's just him, his ability to go with pitches, or if it's a, you know, maybe he's, if I don't, it's a guy who's just a year removed from college ball going against big leaguers. Maybe he's not getting around on it as fast, but he's still making good. All his home runs.
Like a one, that first hit was 106 exit velocity, 103 exit velocity, I think. So
yeah.
It's not like it was a tapper.
No. But everything's been going the opposite. Like all his home runs to right field. Everything's the triple he hit the other night against Sugarland to right field. Just something to watch. I'm super stoked about Cam Smith, but gets his first hit, getting a lot of love on the broadcast. Family getting a lot of love. I would imagine tonight with a whole new broadcast crew in there with Apple, it'll be a reset of that. Apple, I'm sure, watching the broadcast yesterday and seeing what a big story the Cam Smith contingent was at the game will be a big, big focal point tonight.
I do like the Apple broadcast because they almost have a cinematic feel to it. They use super high quality cameras and everything. So I enjoy that part of it. They've got that on field camera that shows guys up close and everything.
Yeah, I'm
they haven't got it. They moved away from a lot of the gimmicky stuff they were doing in the first year, and now they're just, it feels more like a conventional broadcast, but with a few things amped up.
Yeah, I don't blame them for trying. I mean, you're the fifth or sixth outlet carrying games here. You're trying different things, but some of the stuff they try, like when they made Katie Nolan the ambassador of fun.
That was the first year.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, this isn't really fun. For an ambassador of fun, I'm not really having more fun watching this right now, you know?
Which is the streaming service that does the, where they'll have the local broadcast, like a local, the one of the team's color commentators, or sometime they'll have
like Blum will wind up on there doing a game with somebody
else. Which I kind of enjoy, because I think that when the Astros have done it and it's been an opposing broadcaster, I like it because you get more insight into the opponent, but they've done a pretty good job of not acting like they're the home broadcaster and being a homer. They try to play it a little bit more down the middle.
Might be Peacock. I'm not sure. Yeah. Might be Peacock. Not
our
totally sure.
Will know.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Text in Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer, text line. So the Astros win yesterday 3-1. Cam Smith gets his first major league hit. I've got four overreactions to yesterday's win, Seth, and then we'll get to our way too early circle of trust. This is what
I'll
you do.
I'll tell you whether you're overreacting is justified, with a margin of error there. I understand that you're intentionally overreacting.
Yeah.
Or I'll tell you, you're just being a grumpy old man.
Cam Smith, get the engraver ready for that Rookie of the Year trophy. He's batting .333 on the season. Okay. Is that good or
That's
bad?
That's an appropriate overreaction.
Got it. Okay, good.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Until he shows me some reason to doubt him, yeah. I'll just go ahead and go with it, man. Because I've watched this. I've seen this before with Yordan. Hey. Yordan, you kept waiting for the other shoe to fall where, oh, of course, at some point he's going to struggle and it's not going to look right. Man.
We're still waiting.
Yeah.
He's in
I think that first year in the playoffs, he started off kind of slow, but then he went
on a tear. He did.
You know, you didn't even have the playoffs to say, well, oh, yeah, that's where you saw the real Yordan. Nope. He was good and steady the whole time.
No, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. Can you imagine if he had come up with that sliding catch in right field, how much I'd be overreacting right now? Because I would be saying, get the engraver ready for the Rookie of the Year trophy. And get the whatever gold spray it is you use on the gold glove, get that ready too for Cam Smith.
I like that he went for it. I think that I'd rather see him go for that than to play the bounce and allow a base hit. Because
he hit his glove.
Yeah. And it wasn't an error. If it had been an error, then maybe I would have dinged you or buzzed you on the overreaction. But no, I'm cool with that. And especially, it's his first Major League Baseball game in which he's playing a position that he is brand new to. So yeah, I'm totally cool with that play.
Well, I think he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders for the moment too, because there was another hit out towards him later in the game. And knowing the situation where you're up three runs, you don't need to make a sliding catch. He played it casually and let it bounce in front of him instead of sliding, having to go past him and put a runner in scoring position. So I'm one game in. I am enjoying the Cam Smith right field experiment. All right. This was Jose Altuve's first catch in left field as a big leaguer. It was the last out of the first inning. Jake Myers was kind of camped underneath it, and in swoops Jose Kelly Leak Altuve to snag the ball. And the optics on the broadcast was the two of them converging on each other, and it looked like something bad was going to happen. Here's what it sounded like.
Ball into shallow left center field, coming on Myers, coming on Altuve, and Altuve cuts in front of Jake to make his first play as an outfielder.
All right, the best part of that is Blum chuckling in the background. It's not even close. My overreaction, Seth, there will be a heinous, grotesque collision in the outfield at some point in the first month of the season.
Buzz this man.
Buzz me, okay.
Buzz him. You know what? And I'm not denying that there won't be a collision in the outfield at some point this season.
Oh, this season.
I just think that, hey... Tell me whenever you felt completely and totally comfortable that George Springer wasn't going to take somebody's ribs out
in the outfield.
Altuve's going to... I like that Altuve is just... he was able to flip the switch in his brain where he said, all right, I know everything's uncomfortable. I know this is different, but I'm just going to go for it, and I'm just going to go out there and play baseball. So, there'll be a collision at some point in the outfield, as there always is with veteran outfielders.
Okay.
And the big thing with Altuve, you got to remember the simple physics of it.
Yeah.
I think just by virtue of being a lighter, smaller guy, less chance of bodily harm to either guys. The forces involved
won't
be as great.
What are you talking about? There's more chance of bodily harm to him. He's a little guy.
No, he does. He is like a toddler. He hits the ground, he bounces right back up.
That's true.
Like think about the falls that toddlers take.
Yeah.
Where because they're so low to the ground
and
their bones are so flexible and pliable, it would kill a larger man, okay. But Altuve will be just fine.
Just so I'm clear, the buzz that I got on that was not my prediction of there being a collision. I'm just overreacting to there being a collision.
Yeah, like, being a nervous Nelly about
right,
it.
Right. Embrace the collision is what you're telling
Sorry,
me.
Sorry, I forgot how much you love Jake Myers and you're worried for his health
That's
and whatnot.
That's a good
whatnot.
Point. That's a good point. All right, number three. One game in, the Astros need to trade for a bullpen arm stat.
That's an appropriate overreaction.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, kudos to you. I was cursing your name during the game yesterday, but... This is exactly what you were talking about yesterday morning when you talked about, all right, what's the thing that could upend this team and make you feel bad about them early on? Mm-hmm. And you talked about the bullpen. you're a little inaccurate in that it was your two studs that made you feel most nervous.
Yeah, the two
that it was
Abreu
and Hader themselves that almost squandered a three-run lead.
I was worried about the six guys still sitting out in the bullpen yesterday, not screwing it up. Those are the guys I was
worried about. Taylor Scott being perpetually warming up to go bail out one of the guys who's better than him.
At this rate, they're going to need to load manage Taylor Scott, and he might not even get into a game.
He probably won't play tonight because the warm-up takes up. That is, with the relievers, the warm-up's kind of a big deal. If
it's an adrenaline
thing, he might not be one of the top choices tonight because he had to warm up for three innings.
All right, so
he was warming up. We didn't know Framber was going to come out for the seventh. Taylor Scott was warming up.
Yeah.
Then Abreu gets himself into a pickle. Taylor Scott's warming up.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about Josh Hader needing to be bailed out.
Yeah, man.
By Taylor Scott.
Yep. The MVP of that game last night,
Taylor Scott.
Yeah.
Yes.
Taylor Scott without even throwing a pitch. All right, so I've appropriately overreacted to two. I've inappropriately overreacted to possible grotesque collisions in the outfield. My last one, this isn't even an Astros one. This is just one that I've felt having some fun with, and especially watching Mets fans react on social media. Juan Soto, $750 million bust.
Yeah.
Clutch situation. Could have won a game. Highest paid athlete in the history of North American sports.
This is why you pay a man $750 million plus extra perks on top.
Give him seven luxury suites in every game or whatever it is. Yeah. Appropriate overreaction or inappropriate? Okay, thank you. Yeah.
They got him for 15 years, Sean.
Yeah. He'll get a game-winning hit at some point.
Nah. 15 years of this.
That'd be great.
He's going to Pujols his way through that $750 million.
Dude, how stupid is that? 15 years?
I don't know. I would be stupid if it was using any of our finances, but Stephen Cohen is just interest on his principal.
I guess.
He's not even dipping into his paycheck.
I suppose. I mean, last I checked, those guys don't like wasting money on things either, though. You know, like really rich. Really?
Cohen's known as one of these guys that's like super frugal and stingy in some regards when it comes to business. But when it comes to his personal life, he's pinching pennies at the office, wondering why they're spending so much money on ink toner.
Yeah.
But then he'll go out that afternoon and buy a $20 million Picasso.
Yeah.
He's that kind of guy. Boy. So right now the Mets are his Picasso.
Yeah, that's the guy
they look kind of like a Picasso, truth be told.
Yeah, a little bit.
All over the place.
Mm-hmm. Eyeball over
Why'd
here.
Why'd you pay that much money for that? Yeah.
Yep. All right, so you've cobbled together, in the spirit of overreaction, you've cobbled together. And we'll read some of your texts, too, about opening day yesterday. 713-572-4610. Someone asked, why did Chaz take away an at-bat from Cam, and then he comes in and bunts? Chaz was already in the game. They brought Chaz in for defensive purposes, and he happened to come to the plate at a point where Jeremy Pena had gotten on base, so you're just trying to get Pena into scoring position there. They didn't pinch hit Chaz. They didn't pinch hit Chaz to sacrifice bunt. He was already in the game playing right field.
They're looking at Chaz as a less Rico Suave version of Jake Marisnik.
Yes.
But a more productive at the plate Jake Marisnik.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
In three out of his four pro careers, he's been much better than Jake Marisnik.
Yeah.
Offensively.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so way too early circle of trust. What are you feeling here, Pope Zaza?
Okay, so I think the first one is easy because it's Framber.
Yeah.
I think Framber, a couple things that felt good because he always, even though Framber's been pretty steady mentally for a while now, he only had that one glitch last year where he himself said he went off the game plan and everything just kind of melted down.
That was so weird.
I know, yeah.
He gave up three bombs.
But he owned up to it last year when he did it.
Yeah, it was just strange.
So early on, struggling with command, he's running the pitch count up. You wouldn't have thought that he was going to end up going seven innings in this game.
No.
Especially when he was struggling with his command. But he got it under control. And then bottom of the sixth inning was when he was facing Vientos, right? And that last, it was the seventh pitch. They called it a ball, and it was a strike.
Yeah.
And Framber looked visibly agitated, stepped off the mound, threw another sinker after the previous sinker had been called a ball. Threw a sinker, and it was into a double play.
Yep.
And then came back out for the seventh inning. And so, Framber, everything you're looking for from the mental health checklist. He didn't get overly agitated with the umpire to a point where it screwed him up or anything.
I think the last out he threw was a strikeout. I think he finished with an exclamation point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Acuna struck out looking.
That's right. It was a nice breaking pitch right over the outside corner. That was nice. All right, so Framber, way too early. COT status for Framber. Who's next?
Next is Jeremy Pena.
Okay.
I almost forgot Jeremy Pena, and then you reminded me of the very first play of the game for Pena. It was a brilliant, brilliant, dude, like logo-worthy play where he just leapt up and snatched the ball out of the heavens. It was beautiful.
It was a line drive. I don't know what the exit velo was on it, but it was smoked by Lindor. And I don't know that Pena is going to make a better play all year than that one. Like that's very first out of the season for the Astros, and that might end up being the play of the year defensively, just in terms of just the difficulty of the play. There may be a better play defensively at a bigger point in the game. You're in the first inning, so it's not like it saved the game for you, but just purely the web gem, if you just put your hand over what inning and what the score was at the time, that is an athletic play that very few people on the planet can make by Jeremy Pena.
And then they finished that inning with that nice throw by Pena also, wasn't it? No, that was Altuve. That was a line out to Altuve.
Yeah. The last out was the Altuve near collision. Yeah. So Pena was on base a few times and causing some chicanery on the base paths as well, so that was good.
Right, yeah. So next one that I just thought of randomly, these are not power ranked in order, but Yiner. Yiner showing some aggression at the plate, but also with a little assistance from the backstop gods, a pickoff at third, which was beautiful.
It was like, caught stealing. Guy was trying to go from second to third, and give Paredes credit on that too. A great scoop on that play of Yiner's throw.
Yeah.
That was a great scoop. That was one. Paredes had a couple throws earlier on in the game where they got outs. But like he threw it high on a routine play, threw it high to Walker at first base. Walker had to go up and get it and tag the guy. And I'm like, okay, these are the things Seth and I were talking about today where like Bregman just makes these things look routine. And then Paredes with that scoop on that Yiner throw on that caught stealing was really, really good.
Well, and I should have explained it better for people who didn't see the game. The ball went past Yiner, hit the backstop, and went directly back to Yiner.
Yeah, yeah.
So It was a lot of luck involved on that play as well, but Yiner picked it up and made the throw to third, and it was a really nice play by Yiner, and he looked good at the plate.
He's in the circle of trust.
Yeah. Cam Smith, obviously, in the circle of trust. First pitch seen as a major leaguer, gets a hit.
Nice hit.
Could have had a chance to make a really nice catch in right field, but it wasn't an error and allowed a double, but just zero butterflies or anything. He said he had butterflies, but it didn't look like he had butterflies.
No, he played. He didn't look nervous with his play. He didn't look nervous at all. His second at bat, he was getting down the line pretty good. He almost
that was
beat
close.
Out
Lindor made a nice throw, to get him out on that. That easily with a lesser defensive play could have been a base hit,
an infield single. Well, and I thought I saw a tweet. You know, they measure the speed these guys are running down the line, and the speed with which he was getting down the line was an elite level of speed, so that was good to see. You know, it's in the end of the day, it was an out, so it didn't matter on the scoreboard. But yeah, Cam Smith, pretty good athlete. All right,
do we have to? I'm not ready to put him here just yet, but Jake Meyers, 2-for-4.
It's way too early. Circle of trust. Put him in if you want to.
Are we putting him in? No. Okay, that's true. I put Cam Smith in, didn't I?
Yeah.
But I don't have any track record of Cam Smith struggling at the plate.
None. Not even in spring training.
Okay. No, I'm gonna hold Jake out, even though it's a way too early circle of trust.
Okay.
But I did look. I liked having him out there as a guy that can at least be a backstop for Jose Altuve.
Altuve
is going to run in front of ball.
I'm glad you brought this up. No, you can't put Jake in the circle of trust until he shows he can control Altuve. That's his
true.
Job. You got to control Jose Altuve, Jake Meyers.
You don't blame the dog. You blame the dog owner.
Exactly.
And right now, Altuve is playing like an untrained German shepherd out there.
Poodle playing
just viciously attacking everything.
Yeah.
Meyers needs to get Altuve to heal.
Yeah, man.
Bring him to heal.
Right. Altuve out for 2 weeks. Where is he? Man's best friend. He's getting trained. Yeah.
And then the only one I had on there was the crowd. I gave for giving a standing ovation to Altuve at the top of the first inning when he came out there.
They gave one to Cam Smith out in right field.
Yeah.
They were very, very, very giving in their standing ovationness yesterday. The Altuve one was cool, and Altuve was very touched by it as well, he said.
Yeah. Altuve looks like he's having the time of his life. It's a fun new challenge.
No,
you know?
That point was made multiple times throughout spring training, which was kind of frustrating. Both Dana Brown and Joe Espada, if I'm recalling correctly, at least one of them, if not both of them, and some of his teammates, too, were pointing out, like, he's having a lot of fun doing this out there. And I'm like, well, that's great that he's having a lot of fun. Is he good at it? That's what I really need to know.
I prefer to not see him strike out three times. That's a...
Okay. Now, he got a hit his other time up, but...
Yeah.
Okay, but if we're going to overreact...
He's in the circle of skepticism.
Or even an overreaction, right? Like, is it an overreaction, Jose Altuve striking out three times on opening day? Circle of skepticism. We have this circle off to the side. Called the circle of skepticism.
Don't worry. I'm sure at some point this year, Jose Altuve will stop reaching for pitches that are near impossible.
He never does that. Yeah. What are you talking about?
No, he would never do that. No. That's just early season stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. He never does that.
I will put Abreu and Hader in the circle of skepticism. Not like this, man. Not like this.
Yes.
My blood pressure can't handle this, all right?
Yes.
I'm trying to not have a stroke here. It was awesome that you ended up. I did enjoy actually having the final out be Juan Soto under very precarious circumstances. It was fun to get the juices flowing there, but I didn't like the circle. I would have preferred that it came with Hader coming in to rescue somebody.
It turned out to be right. That would have been better if he just came in to rescue and just hammered him out. You'd feel better about, say, today or tomorrow with Hader coming in. Like, I'm nervous about Hader coming in any time right now until I see otherwise. That said, it was one of those things that Hader and the Astros afterwards can say, you know what? We got the win, and we're going to be better for this. This actually put us in a situation that, you know, we'll the scars of this situation will be something that we can rub in the future and look back at, and it's going to make it beneficial for us.
Now, this is a way too early circle of trust, so we're giving very little... We're giving very little credit to anybody who didn't perform well in the game. Obviously, if this was an in-season circle of trust, Jordan would be in the circle of trust and what have you. But it's early, okay?
It's early.
The official circle of trust doesn't come out for another couple weeks. And we're just basing these early ones on immediate results.
I will tell you, the two pickups in the infield, Paredes at third and Christian Walker at first base. Again, this is a game that they won 3-1. There were no offensive fireworks in this game. One of the three runs they got was because there was an overthrow at first base. I mean, it was not an offensive display by the Astros. That said, Paredes working those pitch counts up is something you saw. That was good to see. And Christian Walker making really good contact his first three at-bats.
You know what? let's put them in the circle of trust because we saw what we wanted to see out of them. It said, all right, hey, look. But Paredes, when Paredes made his first nice play in the infield, it was kind of a reminder that, like, oh yeah, okay, he's not Bregman defensively. He's not that level, but it's not like he's a bum as a third baseman. Yeah. And then Christian, both of them with their judgment at the plate, Walker with his hard contact, all of that. So far, so good. We're seeing what we need to see out of him.
Yeah. I Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Tyler McGill versus Hunter Brown tonight. 7:10 first pitch. We're back to evening baseball. Game is on Apple TV. We will have Heidi Watney, the sideline reporter for tonight's game, on with us at 9:00 today on the show. All right. Emergency Pettycast, and this has been making the rounds the last couple days, but you and I have not sunk our teeth into this one yet. But this is one of the all-time great athlete versus commentator verbal battles that we've seen. Verbal battle that had a face-to-face battle that this all stems from to some degree.
It's a great battle in terms of the emotion being displayed by Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah.
And yet it's a disappointingly desperate showing by Stephen A. Smith.
Yes.
This just reeks of desperation.
Yeah.
I mean, he is grasping it for straws in all of this, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm not denying that it's not fun to watch, but, man, Stephen A. Smith's given him... He's taken several shots to the chin, and they're all self-imposed.
Yeah,
he's acting like the pitcher for the Astros.
Ken Giles.
Ken Giles.
He's punching himself in the face. I'm getting that same feeling too. I'm not a huge LeBron fan, but the more I watch Stephen A. And then when Stephen A. is getting out there and just getting his facts wrong about LeBron not being at Kobe's memorial, and if you're having to apologize on Twitter for something you got serious wrong. And then at the end of that tweet, you have to go, but I stand by everything else I said. You're losing the battle. So let's get to the audio that this all circles around. And a lot of you are listening, you know what we're talking about. LeBron James and Stephen A. Smith are going at it right now. The genesis of this wave here was Stephen A. Smith, not all that long ago, basically calling out LeBron James as a parent for having Bronny James in the NBA and even the G League at that point to a degree. Like, he's just, why do you have your kid doing this? He's totally overmatched. This is your pursuit, not really Bronny's pursuit, that kind of thing. I'm paraphrasing what Stephen A. said. It's not really important what Stephen A. said. What's important is it pissed LeBron off to the point where at a game that Stephen A. was at, a Lakers game, LeBron, coming out of the locker room at halftime, ready for the start of the third quarter, came over and said something to Stephen A. They had a little exchange, and then LeBron left because he had to get back to his day job playing basketball. But it was a big scene because everybody filmed it, and you knew what the whole genesis of it was, and Stephen A. commented about it afterwards. LeBron James went on the Pat McAfee show this week and sat down with McAfee for an hour. And I will say, the parts of it that I've seen drop, I've not watched the whole thing. I've enjoyed. You know, it's definitely a different version of LeBron that we see, that we don't see in press conferences or in other interviews. McAfee seems to have that effect on people. We'll get to Stephen A. in a second. Well, you tell me, Seth. You want to start with him calling out Windhorst?
Just go do it however you have to.
Okay, okay. LeBron James. We'll start with LeBron James calling out Stephen Windhorst, because that did piss off Stephen A. as well. Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA reporter, who's covered LeBron since junior high. And here was LeBron calling out Brian Windhorst.
I see a lot of too. Like, I seen Brian Windhorst on one of these shows not too long ago. Like,
Wendy.
Yeah, you played over
high school. Wendy, you guys played together in high school.
Yeah,
right? He's on your high school.
Yeah, this guy was like, you know, says he's like my best friend. These guys are just weird, but
wait, Wendy, that's not real.
Yeah, it was our enforcer, huh?
Knew it.
Yeah, he went on his show and said, you know, like, oh, don't let LeBron fool you. Like, he wears number 23 because of Michael Jordan. Okay, that's a fact. He signed with Nike because of Michael Jordan. It's like, what the f- I didn't. I signed with Nike because I got a hell of a signing bonus, and they gave me a 7-year, $90 million contract. And I moved my mom out of the hood the next day I signed that contract. Like, and ultimately, my whole thing is like, what do I want to wear off the court? It's like, I want to wear Nikes. Like, yeah. I want to wear Jordans. I want to wear Pennies. I want to wear Bo Jacksons. I want to wear Air Maxes. I want to wear, like, you know, so.
Primes.
Like, you know, like, what are we talking about?
Stephen A. is going to come swooping in to defend Windhorst here, and then we'll get to the main event, which is LeBron versus Stephen A. But Windhorst had said those things, and he also pointed out Windhorst in that cut that LeBron's talking about, that he got offered more money by Reebok. You know, he took the lesser money with Nike because of Michael Jordan. LeBron takes exception to that.
Yeah.
The part that really popped was that early part where LeBron insinuates that Windhorst has been saying he's best friends with LeBron.
Yeah, this is where I think that LeBron mistakes what people say about Windhorst with what Windhorst himself has said. I've never gotten the impression that Windhorst tries to act like he's buds with LeBron or anything else like that. But he has had some very good inside info on LeBron at times, and people will say, oh yeah, well, he's just the buddies with LeBron, and that's how he gets these things and everything, which is dirty pool by LeBron. I feel like, so LeBron got, it feels to me like LeBron has gotten sensitive about all these insinuations over the year, but he goes nuclear and acts like Windhorst himself is putting that out there.
Windhorst has never acted like anything other than a journalist every time I've seen him on TV. He's never acted like he's part of LeBron's inner circle or anything like that. Here's Stephen A. Smith defending Brian Windhorst.
I have worked with Brian Windhorst for years. Never once did he say that LeBron was a best friend. A matter of fact, years earlier, it was LeBron who sat in front of the microphones and said, probably nobody knows me better than Brian Windhorst, who's been covering me since I was in junior high school. But that's how he talked about him. Brian Windhorst is an exceptional commentator who does a phenomenal job for ESPN. My show, Get Up, NBA Today, SportsCenter, goes and covers the game. He is.
So that's Stephen A. defending Brian Windhorst. Yeah. So Stephen A. is out to defend anything and defend against anything and everything LeBron is talking about.
Right.
He's called him a liar.
Yeah. Well, and like so far there, like, okay, I get it. It made sense.
Yeah.
I think Stephen A. said what a lot of other people have said. It's like, what are you talking about? He's never called. Now, was Windhorst wrong about what 18-year-old LeBron, how he made his decision-making? Was Windhorst citing that? That's where, if I was LeBron, I would be peeved at that.
Yeah.
Because that does feel like, wait a second, I searched for quotes about LeBron at any point when he was a teenager citing LeBron. I couldn't find anything. Yeah. That part I could see LeBron being PO'd about, but that doesn't mean that Windhorst might be wrong, but he's not claiming that he's best buds with LeBron.
Here's LeBron James calling out Stephen A. Smith on the Pat McAfee show.
Which leads obviously to you and Stephen A. Hey, legit, that feels like a moment that had been brewing for a long time.
He's like on a Taylor Swift tour run right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're watching it. Yep. We're all seeing it.
Oh, yeah.
You're seeing it as well.
It started off with, I didn't want to address it.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't want to address it. I wasn't going to address it. But since the video came out, I feel the need to address
it. Yeah, viral.
Are you kidding me? If it's one person that couldn't wait to the video to drop so you could address it, it's your ass. Like, seriously, he completely like missed the whole point. The whole point. Never would I ever not allow people to talk about the sport, criticize players about what they do on the court. That is your job, to criticize or to, you know, be in a position where, okay, if a guy's not performing, you know, that is all part of the game. That's all part of the game. But when you take it and you get personal with it, it's my job to not only protect my damn household, but protect the players, you know? And I think a lot of the media, including him, and I know he's gonna be happy as hell. He's gonna be smiling from ear to ear when he hears me talking about him again. Oh my God, he's gonna get home and grab some ice cream out of the freezer and sit in his chair and his tidy whities on the couch.
I hope at some point you two get a chance.
Yeah, like, but you're like, right, dude, like, relax, bro. Like, relax.
I like how LeBron, like, seriously. I hate when guys get personal and he paints a picture of Stephen A. Smith with ice cream and tidy whities. That was pretty funny.
Okay, this is where I do the lady doth protest too much a little bit, is that LeBron is saying, oh, I know what Stephen A's deal is, and he's going to be so excited, and the fact that he was able to make a huge deal out of this. All right, LeBron. If what you wanted to do is genuinely have a conversation with him and communicate something to him, are you telling me that you couldn't have given him a phone call?
Right.
Or met with him? You chose to meet with him courtside, where it would be captured by cameras.
Yep.
So let's not act like that you didn't, at least on some level, maybe even subconsciously, also want this to be a big brouhaha or something. I understand not wanting to text him, because then all of a sudden that's a public record. Stephen A. Smith is still, I guess, he's not a journalist, but he's trained as a journalist.
Not anymore, yeah.
You give a fuck, if you want to actually have a conversation with him in person, away from cameras, or on the phone. Stephen A., you're not recording this, correct? Right? Okay,
right,
good.
Right.
You've been around a while, LeBron. You know how the deal works.
Yep.
So I don't buy him trying to paint it like, oh, this is exactly what Stephen A. Smith wants. Dude, you gave him exactly what he wanted. You confronted him in front of an arena full of people and television cameras.
Yeah.
But now you're claiming, I was just trying to have a conversation and clear the air.
Okay,
yeah.
There's two bits of Stephen A. audio in response to that.
Yeah.
Because LeBron
this is
went
exactly
first.
Exactly what LeBron wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's two. I want to get to this one first just to make sure we get this in. Stephen A. does the thing where he says, I could have said a lot of things about you. such as, and he lists a bunch of them. Here's Stephen A. Smith yesterday.
I suggest that he be happy with the things that I haven't brought up. I never brought up really and never really discussed why you were not at Kobe Bryant's memorial service. I never really brought up or discussed why you did not attend Dwayne Wade's Hall of Fame induction when that man was directly responsible for you capturing a championship for the first time in your career. I brought up none of that. I didn't bring up the fact that even though when people had asked, you had alluded to what had happened tragically to your son, and thank God he's okay with his heart condition. I didn't bring up the fact that even though you couldn't go to the Hall of Fame induction of Dwayne Wade weeks earlier, you were out of the country on business. I didn't bring that up. That's your personal business, okay? But the fact is, you wasn't at the Hall of Fame induction of a brother that's going to drastically assist to you being a Hall of Famer because he helped you become the champion that you are, and he was a big brother to you. I brought up none of these things. But LeBron James, at the end of the day, wants to come at me, and he's walking around pouting.
Dude, you're all over the place, man. Was it two weeks earlier or 2 weeks later? We have no idea what you're talking about. And by the way, he was at Kobe Bryant's memorial. Stephen A. had to go on Twitter yesterday afternoon to apologize and clarify that he misspoke and said, when I intimated that LeBron didn't attend Kobe's memorial, I corrected myself in hour two when I acknowledged he was indeed in attendance. My mistake. Shouldn't have even broached that subject. It wasn't my main point. I retract nothing else that I said. Have a nice day.
He should retract the other stuff he said because he almost like made an excuse for LeBron for one of the non-appearances.
Dude.
But I think, was he trying to say that you should have could have made at least one of those
don't
things?
Don't ask me, Seth.
Non-attendance at events for people who have like incredibly erratic schedules and everything else like that. I give that zero credence.
Yeah.
That feels so much like grasping for straws, especially when it comes to somebody like Dwayne Wade. Am I to believe that somehow Dwayne Wade has felt disrespected by LeBron James or that LeBron's probably never professed a deep appreciation for Dwayne Wade in various private moments or something? He sounds really, really, really desperate, especially when he's flat out wrong about the most serious of those.
Yeah.
The one where he was trying to get the most emotional impact there,
Kobe,
was trying to pit him against the estate of Kobe Bryant somehow or something. That was weird. That was really weird.
And he got it wrong. It makes it even worse. So who needs to tap out more here? LeBron James or Stephen A. Smith? Is anybody winning this thing
now? For either of them, they both love the attention, so I don't think either of them need to tap out. I think they'll milk it for as long as they can. Again, I mean, the beginning of this particular episode was LeBron confronting Stephen A. Smith in front of a crowd of people on television cameras.
Yeah.
And somehow expecting a different outcome. No. Like if you're trying to have a product, it's like social media. Like, okay, if you really want to have a discussion with somebody, what's your best avenue?
Yeah.
To hash it out publicly on Twitter or to actually contact that person?
Yeah.
Even just via DM or phone call or text or whatever. Like, it's just LeBron knew what he was doing.
Stephen A is the one that's kind of showing some holes in his game right now, in my
opinion. I think
LeBron's
just playing it better.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
LeBron is playing it better. He's positioned himself where he can be the one that's being the honorable one, and yet it's still all being played out publicly, and both those guys love the attention.
You know me. You know I want this thing to go on forever, and we'll choose whether or not to use stuff on the show. I'm just saying, if we're judging this like a prize fight right now, LeBron James is winning the prize fight right now.
He's winning the war of words.
Yes.
Which is like Stephen A. Smith going out and beating LeBron at basketball.
And dropping 30 on LeBron.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that that LeBron, a basketball player, is winning the war of words versus the guy who's paid more money than anybody else to use his words.
Stephen A's job is to win like seven wars of words every day on television on First Take. That's his job. And LeBron's in his dojo right now, just crane kicking him to death.
This is like some guy from a dirt track showing up at the Indy 500 and crushing AJ Foyt in the day or something. Yeah.
The funny thing on the text page, nobody likes either of these guys.
Yeah, exactly. You don't feel good about any of it
either
ever, other than they're like, oh, I'm just a pawn in your game that I'm even engaged in this. Damn it.
Mock draft injection time, and we've got a CBS Sports multi-round mock draft, but now we can mix in the anonymous scouts talking about who the Texans take. Who are the Texans taking? It's an offensive lineman. We'll let you hear Mock Draft Injection next.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mocarum Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Mock Draft Injection time. And this is kind of fun because now, depending on the position, we've got quotes from anonymous scouts on all of these players from Bob McGinn of Tyler Dunn's website, golongtd.com. So we'll, in this exercise, if you're new to the show or you happen to be listening this segment when normally you're not in your car listening at 7:45 during draft season each and every day, Seth and I pick a different mock draft to explore and see who they've got the Texans taking, see if we can discover any trends. Give Seth a chance to break the guy down a little bit when he's watched them on film. Seth's watched a lot of these guys. And sometimes we get the gift of a multi-round mock draft like we have today with Josh Edwards of CBSSports.com. And that's always interesting because you're like, all right, the Texans do this in the first round. Then what does day two look like? And so we can, at least from a positional standpoint, because maybe the lower down you get in the draft, the less granular the scouting reports need to be probably for people out there. So we do this every day is what I'm saying. So this is Josh Edwards, CBSSports.com. So we're going to announce the pick and then we'll pull up some of the commentary that the anonymous scouts have about said pick. All right. So we ready for this, Seth? I'm copying and pasting the link. So I got the anonymous scout quotes ready to go. All right, Ben, hit that sounder with the 25th pick in the Josh Edwards 3-round CBSSports.com mock draft. The Houston Texans select Kelvin Banks, offensive lineman, University of Texas.
So Kelvin Banks is like many offensive tackles in this draft that people don't know quite whether they're going to be an offensive tackle or an offensive guard or a guard in the NFL. And with Banks, it's easy to think about him as a guard because he's a guy that's better as a run blocker at this point than he is as a pass protector, and he's got. He's got strength. It shows up in the run game. Like, you'll see so many times where he just keeps driving his feet. He's got his body positioning is good and everything. He doesn't quite hold up to power as much as you'd like to see an offensive tackle hold up to power against some of the better guys like the Mikel Williams and guys like that. I'd be very happy with this pick. I know our Longhorns all love Kelvin Banks. But there's a little bit of a projection there in having him play guard. But with the 25th pick especially, I'd feel really good about this. All the things that keep him from being a top 10 pick aren't things that are impossible to achieve. It's not like he's not athletic enough or anything. Like Tyler Booker, I understand. The guard from Alabama, people are concerned about the fact that his overall athleticism doesn't seem that great.
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks, you don't have that same concern. So I would, I'm not going to say he's going to step in and start day one, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
Here's what Scout Anon, the anonymous scouts, say about Kelvin Banks. Let's see if you agree with this. He did play left tackle, but this is one scout. He did play left tackle, but he's got sort of a right tackle's features. He's not perfect, but he's got the size and strength to both block in the run game and enough size and foot agility to protect the passer. If he fails at left tackle, he'll be a right tackle. He has the most value of the tackles in this draft.
Yeah, I know there's another one. One of Lance's anonymous scouts said, I wrote him up as a guard for us. The game, Lance Zierlein's. The game he had a freshman against Will Anderson was maybe the best game of his career.
Yeah.
So that's not one of Bob McGinn's anonymous quotes. But I guess I shouldn't have presented it like he's definitely a guard. He has that ability to maybe project either. Maybe they start him off as tackle or let him compete at guard and move him out to tackle eventually. But there's a lot of upside with him. Some of the things where, when I say he doesn't show strength as a pass protector necessarily, I think a lot of it's more rooted in technique and things that can be improved, and he doesn't look like a guy who's afraid to work on his technique.
Mm-hmm.
The intangibles and everything that you would worry about are all there. I think what might make some Texans fans nervous is that much like Kenyon Green, he's a guy from Humble who is a better run blocker than he is a pass protector. There's certain things, there's some similarities in the scouting report that if you think too long and hard about it, might make you feel like, wait a second, is this another Kenyon Green? I think he's a different type of athlete than Kenyon
Green. You just triggered some Aggies, man. Or some Longhorns. Yeah. Some Longhorns, I should say.
Yeah, compared
our guy to an Aggie.
I am not comparing them. I'm saying there's some similarities that people, when the nerve is still raw there from Kenyon Green.
Oh, like narrative-wise.
If they see it when they're looking at scouting reports and everything, they might feel a little bit differently. I think Kelvin Banks has more athletic upside than Kenyon Green did.
I'm going to read two more scouts on Kelvin Banks, and we'll get to the other picks that Josh Edwards made here. One that mentions guard, and the other one is a negative review of him. And I just want to see what your thoughts are on these. Another scout said this. He does look like a guard, but let him fail at tackle first because those are harder to find.
Yeah.
Do the Texans have the time to allow Kelvin Banks to fail at tackle before determining? This feels like something you would be doing on a 3-win team. Like, okay, well, we're still in a building mode. The Texans are in a mode where they want to go win a Super Bowl now.
No, I think that right now you give them a chance to get on the field at guard.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you've got a young project in Blake Fisher that might end up starting this year, might not, but he's there as your swing tackle for now. I mean, Trent Brown's on the roster. He's for those of you who haven't heard us talk about this, Trent Brown is 6'8", 360 pounds, coming off of a torn patellar tendon.
Yeah.
So I'm not expecting Trent Brown to be an option early in the season, but they've got options at tackle right now. I think if they drafted Kelvin Banks, they would give him a chance to get on the field at guard first.
Yep. Okay, here's a negative review. Tell me if this scout is off base, because you've been largely positive about Kelvin Banks and discussing him here. Scout said this, quote, I don't see it in this guy at all. Big dude, average athlete, gets beat a lot, falls off blocks, not very strong, not very athletic, has issues in space, he'd have to be a guard, end quote.
Right, yeah, and that's where I think that's where you try to figure out over time. You know, with offensive linemen, you see this a lot. There's sometimes guys where it just looks like, man, just like a kid that has his growth spurt when he's 15 years old, it takes a while for him to learn how to control all that weight and all that height and everything, and that the upper body's not quite connected to the lower body when they're moving.
Yep.
That's what Kelvin Banks looks like at times, and that's where it's hard because it's a big projection. Okay, is this something that he's going to, with technique and experience, he's going to get under control? If not, then, yeah, certainly he's got a better chance at guard than at tackle. But, again, that's also why he gets picked 25th overall instead of 10th overall.
If these glitches weren't in his scouting report, he wouldn't be around for the Texans at 25
in the first place. Yeah, that's where none of these guys at 25 are the perfect prospects because that's why they're available at 25.
Yep. All right, let's get to the other three picks here real quick. We'll just rapid fire these. They've got Josh Edwards has, with the 58th overall pick, Darius Alexander, a defensive tackle from Toledo. That would be out of character for Nick Caserio just because it's Toledo and not a Power 4 school.
Oh, yeah.
Right? 79th overall pick. I like this one. I want the Texans to take a running back sometime in the first 2 days. This is a good one. 79th overall, Caleb Johnson, running back of Iowa. That's one of the top three or four running backs in this draft. And then with the 89th overall pick, Charles Grant, offensive lineman William and Mary, which would be way out of character for Nick Caserio. That's not just non-Power 5, that's FCS right there with William and Mary. But Charles Grant is visiting the Texans, if not yesterday, then I think today. He is one of their 30 visits that they're doing. Charles Grant, the offensive lineman out of William and Mary. That would feel a little bit like the Julion Davenport pick, Seth, back in 2018, where I think in the fourth round they took Davenport out of Bucknell.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it wasn't Caserio.
What happened to Julion Davenport?
He might still be floating around the league.
Didn't he play a good spot? Yeah, yeah.
He was starting.
Miami?
He was in the Tunsil trade.
He was in the Tunsil trade, and I think he ended up starting a fair number of games.
He played for the Colts a little bit, too, after he left here. I'll look it up during the break. But there you go. There's our mock draft injection for today.
Running backs are fun because they are the best for the highlight reel that you watch your team drafts a running back, you always get super, super, super excited about them.
Yep.
And it's hard not to. I don't fault anybody for that. And yet, running back might be kind of like offensive line, man. You just flat out don't know until you see him do it versus the NFL. I was talking to John Harris about this yesterday with the offensive lineman. I was telling him, like, man, I get such stress trying to figure out how I feel about offensive linemen because every single one of them has a lot of flaws. They have a lot of things they need to clean up when they get to the NFL. The best example that people have seen here locally was Mike McGlinchey, the offensive tackle for the 49ers, first rounder, came in for a combined practice versus the Texans, and J.J. Watt just destroyed him. And McGlinchey ended up being a very quality offensive tackle.
Paid,
NFL.
Man.
Big contract with the Broncos.
Yeah.
But they've just got so much stuff they have to clean up, and it's a lot of projection. It's just a lot of projection. And at the other positions, it's easier for the positives to show up early on, where at offensive line, it's the negatives show up first and immediately, because you could have 60 good snaps in a game, but those flaws when they show up for five snaps end up, you know, in a 3-sack performance.
All right. Speaking of Scout Anon, you people have loved this quiz game the last 2 days. Seth Payne reads anonymous scout quotes about Texans players, draft picks, current and former, and I have to guess. Play along with us in your cars coming up next.